What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Beyond the Court. Sean Birdsong here, Sharon Letalon. Today, we have a special, special guest. And I know we always say special, but today, this lady is special. We have a former, academic educator. So many words to me, special words to me, but you know, college graduate, 30 years education, also been around sports, the NBA for a long time. I have the pleasure to, you know, give to you all my mother, Candace Birdsong. What's going on, Ma? How you doing?
Hello, son. I am honored to be here with you today. You and Sharon, like I told her, I'm happy to put a face with her name after all this time. So okay. Happy to be here.
All right. That's good. So, you know, we always start out with, you know, with these times that we're in, you know, with COVID and social issues and everything going on for you. What have you seen, you know, as far as an impact, I guess, to you? And like, how have you been, I don't want to say affected, but what kind of thoughts go through your mind of the times that we're in right now with COVID and all these social issues going on?
Well, I have been impacted because I'm a substitute teacher. And so with the kids being in virtual school now, you know, I'm not working. With my second job, I do retail. And so we were definitely impacted. Our store filed for bankruptcy and hours have been cut. And, you know, so it's just affecting so much, and not in addition to so many people that have already lost their jobs, you know, especially in retail. So many businesses have gone out, you know, due to more people are doing online shopping versus coming into the store. So that affects us. So, and then in addition, I just saw in the news, 400,000 people have died, and they're predicting, you know, it's going to go to 500,000 by the end of February. So it's just, I know how so many people are feeling. My heart goes out to those who have lost loved ones. I have lost friends. Our family has been blessed. We've had it, members have had it, but have gotten over it. So it wasn't very serious. But, and it still is, we don't know how many people, I don't know how many people are still coming down with it. We're still on, you know, kind of lockdown situations here, easing up just a little bit, but it's just devastating, you know, so devastating to so many people and to our economy and everything.
Now, I know I'm going to really look at the educator side, and, you know, I so respect educators. My mom is an educator, retired as well. There's so much within our communities, these kids getting lost, first to finally get them to come to school. And I was sharing with Sean the statistics the other day that I found out in New York City, there have 270,000 kids that are off the grid since COVID. They do not know where they are.
Right.
They do not know if they're alive because they don't have the technology, you know, where school is such a haven, even if you let them know. And I saw today, even when I shared with you both that I was up in Harlem with the DNC giving out masks. And, you know, here it is a midday and these kids are still kind of wandering around, you know, looking for something. Yeah. So that explains that the 270,000 off the grid. And, you know, as a kid educator, like I said, from my mom and my cousin, it's heartbreaking because you just were able to get the kids to have a dream, you know, like a Martin Luther King, to have a dream. Mm-hmm. And then that just stopped. How would you say your feelings with the kids that, you know, working these 30 years, how do you think they may be feeling of, you know, dropping off? Do they just give up or, I mean?
There are some, from what I have heard, one of my coworkers, this is her first year of teaching and I feel so sorry for her, you know, to have to come at her for a job this way. But yes, there are kids who have given up because they are having a hard time learning that way. There are kids who are flourishing. You know, it's their thing. So they're doing very well. But it is very hard because sometimes she was telling me that sometimes, you know, kids didn't know that math is at 10:30. They show up at 11. You know, they may show up for the morning session and then they don't show up for the afternoon session, you know. And so when you don't have parents that are there monitoring, and this is one of the things that I was hoping that as a substitute that they would bring us in, because that is something that we can do. We can monitor these kids to see who's on, who's not on. And then we can contact the parents and say, hey, you know, your kid didn't get on today. What's going on? You know, but they didn't do that. So it's a whole new learning, you know, you're just kind of learning as you go. And but it has affected kids. It has affected parents. It's affected teachers. You know, we got teachers that are, I don't think they're going to come back. You know, because they just couldn't handle this type. It's new, you know, and so some can deal with it and others, their stress level, they can't.
And especially a lot of the times with these kids, especially in high-risk areas, a lot of time that was the only like sanctuary for them. And now they don't even have it. You know, my cousin and my mom for so many years given clothes and books and this thing. So all of a sudden was like cut off of them. And, you know, what we're trying to do with these programs is just to bring them back engaged. I mean, what do you think in terms of some of the mentors, how would you, as an educator, re-engage the kids on this platform?
Now, one of the things that I was hoping that they would do, I worked with an after school program called Kids Home. Mm-hmm. And it was you know, where kids would leave, they would leave from school, be bused to us while their parents were still at work and they pick them up at 6 o'clock. So I was hoping that some kind of way we could get that back to act as a buffer, because when this first happened, we didn't shut down until we shut down after spring break here. Okay. And so people were kind of up in arms and saying, you know, the kids are going to learn. They're not going to know. They're losing learning, blah, blah, blah. Well, my perspective was, well, wait a minute. You know, they learned mostly everything that they're going to learn because they took their state tests and everything before spring break. So really from after spring break on down, you're just kind of trying to get through the rest of the year, you know? So I wasn't worried about those kids from last year. I'm worried about the ones this year because we started in August and it's just been virtual. Like you said, you got kids off the grid. You got kids that come on sometimes, kids that don't come on sometimes. I've heard of kids that just aren't going to school anymore at all. They're just going to go out. They're going out and getting jobs, whatever jobs that they can get. So, yeah, I don't know the answer, you know, because like I said, we're kind of learning as we go, you know, and then with COVID and the safety and how many kids you can have for this and spacing and, you know, it's just, I don't know. Hopefully somebody's sitting back and trying to figure it all out. And then come August, we can start over.
Now, we're going to get into a lot more about the kids and your experience in a little bit. I wanted to ask you today, as we celebrate, you know, legendary figure, a true leader in our nation, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You were around during that time. You know, you've told me a few things, but I've never asked what was it like to basically, I don't want to say grow up, but watch a leader at that time really bring together a nation and have certain things pass and just, you know, like your experience watching, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
One of the things was, you know, my parents, they were very involved in the civil rights movement. So we were a part of CORE, and we would go around, my sisters and brothers and I, we would go around and we would pass out flyers. And the thing that's different now, you know, the church was where we had the meeting. So we kind of followed that model that Dr. King did, where, you know, anytime they were getting ready to do anything, everybody would go to the church and they would meet. And that's kind of what we did. And so we would go out and we would pass out flyers about things and to educate the community as to what was going on. We would see things on TV. There was one incident that I do remember. We did picket. We had a Woolworths here in Kansas City, and we picketed the Woolworths. And my dad was a policeman at the time. And we were marching, and another policeman had seen us picketing. And he went back to the station, and he called my dad, Pat. You know, he said, Pat, you know, your wife and your kids are out there marching up and down Minnesota Avenue. And my dad, I don't know what he expected my dad to say, but my dad simply said, yeah, you better not F with them either. You know, so. Yeah. I mean, that's how it was, right. You know, but yeah. So we grew up, even though there was segregation in Kansas City, we experienced a little bit of it, but not to the extent that's in the South. But, you know, we were part of the movement. I remember going to Freedom School one day. This was when I was in elementary school. And no Black kids were going to school this one particular day. And we all went to the church. And the adults there taught us what we needed to know for that day. They had activities and things for us to do. So we participated, you know, even though we didn't experience so much of what they did in the South. We had changes that we needed to make right here in Kansas City.
So around that time, you know, you're in high school, you know, middle school and high school, around all that stuff going on. What would you say your high school experience was like during time of, you know, civil rights and all of that?
I do remember when, you know, they say, you know, things happen, where were you? I remember the night that Dr. King got shot. We were in the kitchen and we were listening to the radio. And then my brother came running up the stairs and said, Dr. Martin Luther King just got shot. And we were like, what? Not all, you know? And we turned on the TV and then it happened. And that was on a Thursday. So I went back to school that Friday, and it was very tense. And a lot of the white kids, you know, they started beating up on the white kids and stuff. And so I know by 1 o'clock, we were out of school. So, and then things, you know, then that's when a lot of rioting started and, you know, all that. So, yeah, it was a very, very tense time. People were very, very upset. So for high school, not so much. We, there was much more integration going on. And so people were mingling more with each other. We had a great principal, Mr. Roan, and he knew everything that was going on, and he, anytime anything would come up, he would squash it. So I always said that Mr. Roan and my dad's brother, Uncle Ben, he was the security guard. Those two people ran Wyandotte High School. Go Bulldogs, anybody that's out there. Yay. And so, you know, we didn't have a lot of racial tension. It was more in junior high school because of, you know, the assassination. But in high school, it wasn't so much with it.
Why is it taking so long for this country to kind of embrace what the rest of the world has already dealt with?
Because of our history.
Exactly.
Because of our history. You know, and now the thing about it now is with COVID and the racial injustice and everything that is going on is bringing it out. People are becoming more aware because now you're staying at home, you're watching the news, you're listening to this and that, and you're reading things. And so it's opening up what we already knew, you know. But it's opening up the eyes of a lot of people. And so that's why you see people asking, well, I didn't know, what can I do? And, you know, because, you know, my sister always was trying to say, you know, be careful because they will rewrite history to make it be the way they want it to be. But now, I mean, there are shows that are coming out and things that I'm seeing on the news. I didn't even know today, for example, that lines up with what's going on in DC and with our country, that in Wilmington, Delaware, this isn't the first time that there has been an attack against our democracy, like our legislation. Wilmington at the time was 56% Black. And so they were rising, a lot of Black voting and all of this going on until, you know, white supremacists rose up and said, no, this is not going to happen anymore. And so the men were meeting at a building and they burned the building. And when they came out, that's when they killed them. I had no idea that that had even happened in history. And so it suppressed the vote. You know, and so even I say that to say all of this, even with what's going on today, I told Sean, we had a conversation and I said, you know what? I said, one of the things that I think is going to happen, I said, just keep an eye out. Like our pastor says, stay woke, you know, because I really think that that's what's going to be the next thing that's going to happen. There's going to be more cases that are going to come up where people are trying to suppress the vote, especially in urban cities.
You know, part of what I did today was just telling people, don't think your job is finished. You know, the job has just begun. Whoever you vote should just vote, but really stay proactive in the democracy. Yeah. Stay proactive in what democracy is and be engaged. I'm not saying to go necessarily be engaged about a political party. Why don't you be engaged in the process of democracy and make change on the grassroots level? So if you don't like what's going on in your neighborhood and the representative, the commissioner, whoever it is not doing their job, then you run for the job.
Exactly. You run because or either vote them out.
Or vote them out. That's really... How many?
And that's the other thing.
They don't. I had to learn the
Constitution. The Constitution now. You know, where you were sleeping in class before, and you thought it was all so boring. Here we go. You know. Yeah. I saw a fantastic. This kind of goes back to Martin Luther King, on Good Morning America today. They have a Martin Luther King contest, and these kids got up and spoke. And one young lady came up, and I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly how she said it, but she said, you adults, look at what you're doing and how you're acting.
Yes.
We kids are watching you, you know? And then they asked this young man, what do you think Martin Luther King would say today about what's going on? And he responded kind of like, he would say that his job isn't done yet. You know, and then the last lady that when the young lady they asked, she said, you know, America, you need to take a deep breath. You know how we tell kids? You can see the emotion rising. They, take a deep breath, count to 10, and calm down.
Changing.
I think that's the greatest gift that I got as far as education wise was from my mom being an educator. And I wanted to ask her. You know, we had Bijan Armstrong on the show last week, and he discussed how his parents really molded him in his decision-making and that's for him to go to Iowa, and then eventually him going to the NBA, and then his dad even saying, okay, well, you got drafted, but it's not a career yet. And then Bijan was like, what do you mean? He was like, okay, well, yeah, you got drafted. So now you got 1 year, 2 years. He said, that's not a career yet. So my question for you would be, eventually, we're going to K-State, you know, university. What was the message, I guess, from grandma and grandpa to you to prepare you all to go to college? You know, all five of you guys went to college, graduated. What was the message of the importance of why education was so important for you to go to K-State? And once you were at K-State, what was your major?
The message to all of us was very simple. You will go to school, you will go to college, and you will graduate, period. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. you know.
Right.
But, you know, and because I really didn't, I hadn't planned on really going to college at first when I graduated, because in sixth grade, my sixth grade teacher for our party took us to the airport and we got to get on a plane. And we sat there and the pilot came out and talked to us, and the flight attendant came and she told us what her job was and everything in her uniform and all that, you know. So I was like, this is cool. This is what I want to do, you know. Well, after I graduated, then I was, you know, checking into it and going, but I was only 5'1" tall. So that automatically knocked me out. You had to be 5'5" or above. So I said, okay, time to go to school. So I went to Kansas City, Kansas Junior College for 2 years and got all the hard subjects knocked out. And then went to K-State after that. And the only reason why I went to K-State, because most of my sisters all went to KU. So, and I had visited them. I used to go hang out with them on the weekends and, you know, go to games and met all the basketball players and all the people they knew and stuff, you know, so it was cool. So in my mind, I'm going to KU. But K-State offered me more money. So that's how I ended up at K-State. And I had worked during the summer with kids in the parks. Mm-hmm. They had a park program and we would just be there from 9 to 3 every day. And kids could come down, we play games with them, we'd do all kinds of stuff, arts and crafts and things with them. And so I'd already started working with kids. So I said, you know, I think I'll just go on and go on into education. And so that's what I did.
We did BJ Armstrong the other day, that his parents were phenomenal, like you are as well, is that he said his dad always told him, and I'm just going to use that line for the youth I'm trying to empower. He says, his dad told him, find out who you are before society tells you who you are. You need to know who you are before they tell you who. And I was like,
that's powerful.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on that, that's what made him continue on the track. And when he walked across that stage, because his grandmother didn't graduate from college, or I think she just finished elementary school. His mom finished high school, his dad, and he was an only child. And he says, when I walked across that stage in Iowa to get my degree, I was walking for my whole family and for the ones coming up. That was the next level, because he always had a sound foundation that he learned who he is as a person. So no one could tell him who he is.
To this day, I pledged Delta Sigma Theta. And this weekend was our chapter anniversary and my line anniversary. So we got to talk to sorors from all over the country. And it was amazing. And there was a soror that actually said she graduated in the 80s, that she was the first in her family still to go to college. You wouldn't think that it would still be happening now, but it is, you know, even with kids today, that they will be the first in their family to go to graduate from high school even, and to go to college. So, yeah.
I still think, you know, some kids may not want to be in college, but, you know, that's why I think you need to have trade schools and alternative methods of higher education.
What Sean was asking in high school, we had that in high school. We had that in junior high school and we had that in high school. They offered those classes. They don't offer those anymore. I think they're slowly coming back, but you had home economics. You had how to fix a car. I forgot what it was called, you know, and some other courses that weren't, and those were primarily for kids. I mean, it's for everybody, but those kids who really weren't interested in going to college, they knew how to do something with their hands. They had a trade that they could do. And so we got away from that in education, but I think they're now seeing how important that was, and they're slowly bringing it back to off, because not everybody is going to go to college. You know, they don't want $100,000 loans when they get out. Right.
Now,
it's
you were
amazing how much it costs now.
I know.
Now, you were able to be in education for 30 years plus. What, of all the experiences and the kids and everything that you've seen, what would you say was probably your fondest memory of you being an educator? You could share.
I think right now is because I came back home. I still see a lot of the kids from when I very first started teaching before I left and moved to New Jersey. I still see them and they're doing well. They have families of their own. And then I still run into kids that I had. I've been retired for 5 years and I still run into kids that I had. And one of the things that I keep hearing over and over again, even when they tell me, you are my favorite teacher. Yeah, okay. But they would tell me, and one lady recently told me, she said, because you let me do projects. That's how I taught. You know, I had a group of kids that could take what I was saying. I could lecture and write on the board and blah, they got it. But I had a group of kids that couldn't get it that way. And so when it came to assessment time, I had both. You can either do paper pencil or you could do projects, which I like doing projects because I think it tells you more about what a kid has learned from what you told them. So that was her. And that helps me feel, makes me feel really good. I run into kids that were my discipline challenges, but they appreciated the fact that I got on them. As one gentleman in particular, he said, yeah, you were my favorite teacher because you didn't let me get away from anything, you know. And so, but he had no idea how every day I was doing this.
Right. So in your opinion, what is missing in the education system? You know, or like what kind of subjects do you think would need to be implemented for some of these kids? And not really, more so not subjects, but a certain thing that needs to be taught more to really get the kids prepared for life after school, as opposed to just your math, English, science, social studies, and history.
Okay.
A life skill.
When I was teaching, you know, we always had to, we had people that would come into the district that would try to sell their product. And I went one time for 2 days, this guy was a behavior. He put a book out on, you know, how to do behavior in the classroom. And there was really one thing that I really agreed with him on. We in education, we need to slow down. They have pushed so much. I mean, some of the subjects, I mean, I saw it as a fifth grade teacher. Some of the subjects that we were now teaching fifth graders, I did not have that until I was in junior high school. Wow. And so they keep taking the curriculum and they're pushing it down and pushing it further and further and further and having so many kids to do things that they're not ready for. So then, you know, the testing, the big focus on testing got out of control to me. But I mean, it's what you had to do. And, you know, then it leads to other things for people to do things, you know, that they shouldn't do and people to get fired. You know, you have people trying to get test scores up, you know, or you're going to be fired. And so they would change test scores and all that kind of stuff, you know, instead of just teaching, just take it, just teach, you know. But the biggest thing, I think, is discipline, is the discipline. There's so little respect. You know, when I was a kid, teaching was a respectable job. You know, it was right up there with the lawyers and the doctors and everybody. But now, you know, it's been dumbed down. And so I think we need to get back to, because I saw a big, and this is one of the things that just frustrated me when I was teaching, that teachers started bribing kids to learn. And, you know, all the tickets, all the parties, all the candy and the gum, and do you do this, and I'll give you this. And they became, and you know, we got generations of kids that grew up and growing up thinking that, okay, well, what you gonna give me if I do this? You know, they're like, I'm going to give you a pat on the back, say good job. I'll give you an A if you did it like you were supposed to, you know, I'm not going to flunk you, you know. So, and I would still see it when I was substituting. They would take me to the treasure box. They would show me where the tub is, you know, first thing. Well, my teacher, you know, my teacher gives us this if we do this. I'm like, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave a note to your teacher and let her know how you were. And then she can do what she does. But none of that today. Sorry. So I'm hoping that we will get away from that, bribing kids, because put the fun back in learning.
Mm-hmm.
The fun has been taken away because of the focus on just testing and passing this state test, passing this test, you know, and that's the drive. And it has just taken the fun away. And so many teachers I know here, we say that all the time, you know, teaching used to be fun. Yeah. And people left the job and found other jobs because the fun was gone. You know, it's not what you signed up for. So the joy of it. So I would say that, and communication with parents. You have to have that communication with parents and go above and beyond, you know, and follow your code of conduct. We used to put out code of conduct books, you know, but they wouldn't follow the code of conduct. Okay, you did a class too. That's it. You're supposed to be suspended, but you're not, you know. So it's like, why have a code of conduct book if you're not going to follow it? And the parents need to be knowledgeable at the very beginning of school about that code of conduct book. So they're not surprised when their kid does something, a class two or a class three, you know, and you say, oh, well, you're expelled for the rest of the year. Well, why? Well, it's in the code of conduct book.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know nothing about that. You know, because we hand it to them, you know, they're not going to read it. yeah, but the way kids now, there's so much that they can get away with, you know, versus what we were able to get away with. And I think that that has caused a lot of the difference in the way that even how they look at school. Because, you know, a lot of kids, they don't even want to go to school.
No,
we wanted to go to school. You know, because after school, we had all kinds of programs, activities, you know, and it wasn't just sports, the languages, you know, Spanish club, German club, French club. You had the yearbook, you had book
cooking club.
You had cooking club. Yes, we had all of this to do. And so we wanted to go to school, you know, but now, you know, as far as high schools, I don't know how much of that is still going on, but I know there was a decline in it. And because I picked up my yearbook and looked at it, and I was like, page after page after page, this club. And I was like, wait a minute. I started thinking, I said, were these teachers required to do this? Was this an expectation of them to do it? Or did they just do it because they wanted to do it? You know, so I don't know. I don't know how it was with us. But yeah, they need to bring all of that stuff we used to do, bring it back.
You mentioned earlier, you know, you came back from New Jersey, you know, while you were in New Jersey, obviously, you know, you're married to Dad, former NBA player, oldest Bird Song. Now, what was that transition like, you know, you being in education and then you marry him, freshman basketball player? Did you continue to be involved in education, or what was really, I don't want to say your role, but like, what was that kind of experience like going from city to New Jersey during that time?
I taught here for 2 years and then got married and we left and went to New Jersey. I had heard about the New York schools and I was just like, no way.
Oh, so even when Dad had signed the contract, when Dad signed the contract, you still were thinking about going to teach.
Yes. Okay. However, back in the 80s, it was difficult because I ended up substituting, because it was difficult to get into a teaching job. I mean, I went for one was, while I filled out the application, there were 400 people that had filled out that application for that one job. Mm. I was like, okay. So, you know, I just kind of put it on the back burner, but then I eventually ended up substituting when I was there. So I wanted to stay involved. And the thing, beautiful thing about New Jersey, man, they gave me a lifetime license, you know? Mm. But when I came back here to Kansas, they took a year away from me. So it's like, what? I don't understand that. But yeah, but the hardest thing, and this was not only with me, but with other wives that were on the team, was leaving family. Because one of my best friends, Deborah Cook, you know, they came from LA. And so she had nobody. Here, I had nobody. Well, my sister was in Philadelphia, and then she ended up moving back to Kansas City. And then my other sister was in DC, which is 4 hours away. So we were basically alone. My other friend, Pam Bailey, she from Seattle, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of, we became family. We formed that bond. We still have that bond to this day. We were called the Jersey Girls, you know? And yeah, so we got a reunion we're trying to put together for hopefully the end of the summer. But yeah, that was, it was hard coming to a place as huge as New Jersey and New York was. I mean, it was just overwhelming with all the expressways and the cars and the people. And, you know, it was just mind blowing coming from Kansas City. I mean, Kansas City was not that big, but it was big enough. But coming to New York, yeah, I was just stressed all the time, until I decided one day, I said, look, you have got to learn how to get around. And so I just got in the car and just started driving. Once I learned my way in and out of New York, it was good. I was in by 10, out by 3, you know. So
now, during that time, what players, were you a fan of the NBA? Did you like to watch basketball, or Can you talk about what kind of players you probably like to watch or anything like that, like during that time?
After college, before I met your dad, I was not a fan of the NBA because, I mean, I was a college fan, you know. We watched college. And then once, you know, we started dating and got married, then, of course, I became a fan of the NBA. We became close with a lot of the guys, not only from Kansas City, but in New Jersey also. And then I had a couple of friends that were on the New York Knicks team also.
Before you went to New
Jersey. Yeah, I got into it. I mean, you learned and got into it and started watching it. Even after when I came back here, but then I noticed the game changing, you know?
What way? And the
defense kind of backing off, you know, the 3-point shot, everybody wants to hit a three, you know, it's like, what's happened to the game here? You know, I mean, and they would get serious like in the fourth quarter, because of course, you know, you wanted to win, but I just noticed the game changing and then, you know, the superstars, you know, rising up and even to today, I watched Hardeman, I think that's his name.
James Harden.
Yeah, Harden. They had a clip on, they played, I guess, yesterday or something. And he came down, he was on the end, he got the rebound, came down, and the guys literally on the other team just moved away from him. I'm like, what happened to taking a charge? Where's the defense? You know?
Right.
I think what you're saying, during that time, it seems like the NBA's, you were seeing the transition of the NBA coming from the pure, what we call Rutgers Park, you know, because I grew up in the street ball, you know, people playing the hardwood floor of like playing to play basketball, the purity of basketball, where the NBA was already starting to shift to be entertainment.
Yes. Yes.
So when you had the entertainment, and then it grew like crazy, obviously, because the entertainment and the advertisement value, mm-hmm. You know, that's why I love dealing with legends more. I'm like, you know, because I played basketball in high school, not college, you know, but it was the purity of the sport,
right,
versus the entertainment, and the two need each other, because if they didn't start addressing, I guess, the entertainment value of the sport of basketball, it would not have grown to what it is right now. But we just love a mixture. Yeah.
It's amazing how much money they make now. Woo! But go get it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
because even in school, you know, when you have career day and all that, you know, and you say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they think football player, basketball player. What was the other one? I forgot. But those were they want to be the athlete because they see the money and, mm-hmm. and all the things that come with it, but not understanding the sacrifices that you have to make, you know, and how, and the character and building and, you know, the things that you have to do with your skills, not only just your physical skills, but your mental skills,
yes,
in order to be able to meet that dream, you know, right, because not everybody's going to make it.
Speaking of that, Mom, we had Jeffrey Jordan on, and I asked him if, you know, Michael or Juanita ever told the kids, you don't have to play sports. And I expressed to him that I remember in middle school and high school that even though, you know, I was in high school with the team and the success we had and everything, you were still like, Sean, it's good if you want to play basketball, but you don't have to play basketball. And mm-hmm. That's like, as a parent, like, what was that, because of maybe the experience that, you know, the business of sports is? I know for Jeffrey, he was like, yeah, the business of sports kind of, you know, what Michael and Juanita taught them as far as you can have options. What was it like for you? Like, what made you want to tell me or Sydney, you know, y'all don't have to play sports if you don't want to?
Yeah, you didn't. Because I knew the things that you were going to be going through and that possibly you might not make it, you know, because again, there were so many people that you had to compete against. You had to bring to the game something that nobody else could do, something that they would say, whoa, you know, and if you were just the average player you're doing out there, what everybody, any other guard could do or any other forward or whatever could do, you know, you might not get picked up or looked at. So, and then at that time too, the business was growing. It's like Sharon was saying, it's becoming an entertainment type thing. And so there were other avenues that you could go into. You could go into the front office. You could be a scout. You could be, you know, a general manager. You know, you didn't have to just play the sport, but if you needed, if that was your passion and you needed to be around it, look at what the other options are within that field and plug yourself in there.
You need a degree. You want to work for the NBA?
And you have to make sure that you tell them too, because I would tell my kids all the time, hey, you know what? When I graduate, that's all I needed was a high school education. I could get a good job. You can't anymore. You have to basically pretty much now have a master's degree in order to make the kind of money that you, to start off anyway, that you want to make. So no longer are the good paying jobs at that high school level.
Right. Now the message for the kids, you know, for you, all the experience that you've had, what is one message that you would really want to stress and push to them, a tool to be successful? Not really school. If it is school, that's fine. But what's something that with your experience that you've seen that kids really need to know about how to become successful in life?
Number one, you have to be respectful to people. You have to treat people right. Treat people the way that you want to be treated.
Yeah.
You know, that's the golden rule, you know, and I would preach that to my kids all of the time, you know, and at the same time, you got to improve on your skills, whatever it is. Be the best. Martin Luther King, I saw it's one of the things Martin Luther King used to say, be the best you can be. If you were the street sweeper, I think that's what he said. If you were be the best street sweeper that there is. Tongue tied. You know, but I would stress that to them. You know, there are things that you have to learn with people, knowing how to be a team player. Mm-hmm. You know, because right before I retired, that was one of the big things that businesses had relayed to education. We need people on our jobs who know how to work with other people.
Yeah.
And so that's why I would stress projects and, you know, make them team up with somebody to do something. And even though they say, you know, first thing out of their mouth, I can't work with so-and-so. We don't get, I'm like, you know, time out. You know, for this right here, you have to work with that person. You have to learn how to get along for this amount of time to get the job done. This is a life skill you need to learn. You know, because I was like, what if I said Miss Cooper told me to go work with so-and-so and I said, Miss Cooper, I don't want to go. I can't work with that person. You get fired. Yes. So, you know, you have to learn how to tolerate people, how to work with people, be respectful, learn perseverance and effort, you know, always do your best, but push through it, you know, because you're going to hit obstacles. Things are not going to work out all the time, you know. So you got to say, okay, back up. Let me look at this again and keep pushing towards it. So that's it's like what you all teach in basketball. You got to listen. You got to learn how to follow instructions. You know? So those are the things that, you know, and just keep dreaming. You know, pursue your dream. Just keep going at it. If it's in here, because sometimes dreams are going to change. You know, you're going to, at middle school, you want to do this. They don't change. High school, you want to do this. You get to college, you want to do this. You know, so just keep yourself open to what it is you were out and learn how to communicate. Because a lot of times now, it's not anymore of what you know. It's who you know.
Yep.
To get in, you know. So, you know, learn how to communicate with people and socialize. Exactly. And that's one of the other things we need to get back to is teaching them how to write and how to
write in a complete thought.
Exactly. Because now, you know, kids, right, they'll tell you, oh, and you have these people out here that'll say, you know, put these books out and say, well, just let them write whatever they want to write and write it how they want. No, I mean, that's okay when you up to about second grade. After that, no. You need to learn how to write correctly, you know, and that was one of my worst subjects was English. We had to diagram sentences. I hated diagramming sentences, but hey, you know, something you have to do. But you're right. You know, and one of my sores, we were talking about, you know, the phones and Facebook and all that. And she had a great line. She said, fast on Facebook and look at another book.
To you, what does being an American baller mean to you?
To me, it ties, just what I said, ties hand in hand with what you all are doing and what we do in education, is teaching kids how to be successful, being honest with them on the things, you know, but their dream may not happen. So have another option, you know, don't just have tunnel vision, you know, and in the, at the same time, develop your skills, learn how to listen, learn how to follow instructions, be respectful, you know, the things that I just finished talking about, you know, because all of those are life skills that you need to have in having a relationship with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you guys are doing a fantastic job. I just want to let you know that. I'm so proud of you, son.
I appreciate you.
We love doing this because, like I said, this is the new reality, the new norm. And if we can touch people, you know, I would say we bring them in with a sport and they want to teach them life lessons.
And it has worked. You know, this is not something that has never worked. My people do it all the time, you know. And so kids have developed and they have had goals, they've gone on and they've done well in the classroom, you know, because it goes from, oh, they're checking on me this week, I better do something, to I want to do it now, you know, this is what I need to do it. This is where I want to go. This is going to get me there to where I want to be. So I'm going to suck it up and get it done, you know?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you know, we appreciate you, Mom. I mean, I can't thank you enough, not even just for today, but life, you know, like I said, you're the reason why, you know, we're on this platform. I had somebody to look up to education-wise, kept me on the right path, me and Sydney. So, you know, I just want to say thank you. And I appreciate everything that you've done, you know, in the community and school and for us. So thank you again.
You're welcome. And I just, one other thing I want to let kids know, you can always go back to school. I told you all that. Absolutely. Education is something that, you know, I had to go back to school 5 years ago to renew my license, you know? So you can always go back to school. If you hit a pause, okay, you hit a pause. Don't think that that's the end. You can always go back.
And folks, that's a wrap with American Ballers Beyond the Court. So looking forward to next time. And you're always welcome to come back and give us some more points of views.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Mom. Bye.